attractive.
I don't want to grow up, maybe if I did.
Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play dude.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, man. Welcome back. Another edition of the toy department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky.
That was like a big welcome back, though.
I know. Well, yeah. You know, we took a week off.
I know.
I miss you, buddy. One of those things. Scheduling conflicts, you know? They're hard, man.
Yeah.
I probably should not get into the invasive medical procedure that caused me to miss the podcast. But let's just say it was not at all fun.
No one enjoyed it.
No one enjoyed it. Well, you know what? I think the doctors kind of enjoyed it because I cried like a little girl. Like,
fair
it
enough.
Was, I like literally they had to bring a nurse in to calm me down. It was bad.
Yikes.
So what I miss while we were gone, Lamb? Like, you know, there's a lot of culture happening.
Yeah. Yeah, I fell behind on most of it, you know? Like, it's like as soon as Mom and Dad left, and I no one was keeping an eye on me to make sure I watched all the stuff I was supposed to watch and did all the appropriate internet reading. All of a sudden, I like really slipped. I started just like sitting around listening to old music and stuff, and then I really lost track of time. So thank God you're back, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The culture, though, is the biggest thing you missed the Game of Thrones trailer?
I guess. Maybe it's just me. It's hard for me to get too fired up about a trailer for a television show. And I don't know if that's just like old world thinking.
Well, is it that people are getting fired up about the trailer? I mean, yes. People are getting fired up about the trailer, but that's just a reflection of their fired upness about the show, right?
Yeah, oh, sure. Sure. And, you know, people are going to analyze every little detail and try to figure out if this Jon Snow thing is for real or not, you know.
Well, but come on.
Right, okay, you know. All right. I think we all know. But, you know, everyone's looking for confirmation of the thing that we all know that we know.
Right, right.
But I guess for this particular season, you know, because, yes, this is the first season where, you know, people don't have the cheat code, of the books to feel like they know what's going on. You know, it's like watching The Bachelor without Reality Steve for a lot of these people all of a sudden. And so, yes, there's going to be the trailer like, ooh, what are we getting? I get, there's going to be that sense.
Right. And there's now my favorite part, because I have read some of the books, but I was never ahead of the show. So I never had the book feeling of like, oh, you guys don't even know what's about to happen. But I got to say, the most exciting thing to me about being off the books is less those obnoxious people not having anything to say and more those obnoxious people having more to say with theories. Theories are a beautiful thing. And there was this fear of theories before, because if someone who read the books is giving you theories, they're actually just spoiling it for you.
Right, right.
So you like no one really wanted to listen to theories. People who'd read the books didn't want to share theories. Now it's like an open theory market, and I'm into that.
So do you have a thing for this upcoming season that you're most excited for?
Arya. 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 I'm team Arya, man. Ride or die. Or both.
I think I'm most excited for Ian McShane.
Yeah, I see. That's exciting. I actually only heard about that like a week ago because I don't do a great job of following the like casting notes 6 months ahead of time. Mm-hmm. I love Ian McShane. Deadwood is one of the great TV tragedies of our lifetime, and by that I mean the fact that it kind of got its legs chopped off when it was really getting rolling. I think he's just wonderful in almost everything he's in, and this seems like the perfect environment for him, doesn't it?
It does. Did you see, I guess he accidentally spoiled something, like, in an interview?
I saw he made some hilarious comments about spoiling things. I didn't say that he actually also spoiled something.
And he's basically like, what are these people all getting worked up about? It's just tits and dragons.
Yes, which is the best line, and so true. But to be fair, I guess this is in my defense, although I don't think it's going to sound much like my defense. Tits and dragons have been two of my foremost interests for a very long time. I'm not totally ashamed that I'm super into a show about tits and dragons. You know,
that's
what I
funny.
Loved as a kid is books about dragons and TV shows and movies that involve dragons. And tits came along pretty quick after the dragon started.
And that song, Puff the Magic Dragon.
Yeah.
You're in on all of it.
Great song.
See, I'm kind of the opposite approach. Like, you know, I was initially resistant to Game of Thrones. Like, I was not one of the people that was, like, right in right away. Because I've always sort of felt like wizards plus magic plus dragons equals nerds.
Right. Like, so you were not, like, a Tolkien kid.
Yeah. I like The Hobbit. But, like, no, I was not one of the people that got and I played some Dungeons & Dragons, I guess, when I was, like, a kid. But, you know, now that I'm a full-grown adult, like, I'm just... Uh-huh. Not interested in going back to the forest. And I needed this show is really good.
Right.
In fact, I probably needed a steady 18 months of this show is really good before I was like, all right, fine.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it turned out it was really, really good.
And you know what? It turns out as interesting, you know, interesting enough, and I'm sure Ian McShane realizes this, it's much more than tits and dragons. I mean, what makes the show incredible is the storylines, the drama, the recklessness of George R. R. Martin and now the showrunners with the lives of their characters. There's a lot about the show that transcends the genre.
I would say the characters themselves, right?
Yeah.
Like, none of this works if you don't genuinely care about these people. Right?
Yeah, I mean, the Stark family especially, because they're at the heart of it, and man, are they beset by tragedy and disaster throughout everything we've seen. So
do you think the Stark family is the most interesting part of the show?
Are they the most interesting? That's fascinating. I think Arya is and has always been my favorite character, and I find her incredibly interesting. I mean, no, the Stark family in general probably was not, but they were sort of the meaty center of it.
Yeah,
and
see, to me, everything orbits around the son of the Lannisters.
Yeah,
like I think, like those are the most tragic, the most nuanced. You know, kind
are they
of
the
characters.
Most tragic?
Kind of.
The Stark family.
You know, you get well. Look, there's a lot of deaths in both families.
Wait, are you?
A lot of people tortured in both families.
Exactly. So, a lot of bad
really
stuff.
I
mean,
really quite a toss-up.
I'll tell you this: if you give me like half of Theon's pain as Stark pain, Stark's win for sure.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like, he's not Theon Stark,
to,
man.
Now I'm just trying to steal other people's pain for my pained family.
Which living family members are happier people in that world right now? Would you say it's the Lannisters or the Starks? I would say that the Starks are.
I mean, when you say living Starks, like we're basically talking Bran and Arya, right? That's it.
Sansa is living.
Oh yeah, Sansa's living.
Yeah.
Oh man, I totally forgot. Where is Sansa these days? She's married to the crazy Bolton bastard, right?
Right. She's on the run from him, I believe. She's with
she escaped.
Littlefinger.
Right. She escaped with right.
Yeah. You know, not to say that she's happy, but I don't know. They seem like I don't know.
But I think of all of the members of all of both of those families, Tyrion is probably doing the best, right?
Maybe. Isn't he the most miserable though?
Well, he's always kind of miserable, but he's like in charge of Meereen now. He's just like he's chilling in Meereen.
Yeah.
Daenerys is gone. Dario Naharis and Jorah ran off to try to find her, and he's like chilling on the throne, basically, which is beyond the fact that that's kind of a cool, you know, trip and fall and end up standing situation. He loves the politics. That's his thing.
Yeah, I suppose. Maybe he's finding his place. I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting to see.
Maria just lost her eyes, man.
There's also the sort of this, like, prism, too, of, like, you know, I mean, look, the show is, like, I think there's an equilibrium in the show, right? Anyone who's up at the start of a season of Game of Thrones will probably be down by the end of it, right?
I mean, you probably could have just said, anyone who's on the show will be down by the end of it at this point. Like, what? Who's really doing great? I mean...
Maybe that's the great feat of this show, you know... It's a show essentially that has some of the same sort of message of the Walking Dead, in that like life is basically an endless slog of misery.
Yeah. It's rough out here.
from which there is no hope. And yet it's so thoroughly enjoyable to watch, right?
That's a great point. I mean, I do often enjoy The Walking Dead, although I guess we don't want to do spoilers. Are you current on The Walking Dead?
I am not current on The Walking
Dead.
Okay,
so then we can't do it anyway. That's good.
That's, you know, for me, like, I've come to the day of reckoning with the Walking Dead, where I'm, I don't know, maybe three episodes deep on the DVR, and it's like the last thing I'm going to get to in a week when I'm trying to catch up.
Yeah,
I think we may be ready to break up. It's not one of those breakups where we're fighting and I'm going to slam the door and walk out. Like,
I feel like
I've lost the flame, Walking Dead. I've lost the flame, you know?
I do feel like that's probably one of those shows you could end up with six on your DVR and then, like, one rainy or snowy Sunday, just, like, get in a Walking Dead mood and plow through 6 hours of zombies.
Yeah. I just don't – I feel like I've kind of seen it from them.
Yeah, and what I was going to say, to tie it back to the great show that's coming back that we're all very excited about right now, and I feel like it's been this way for about a full season's worth of stuff, you know, half of last season and this season maybe, and there are some exceptions, but generally it's like just when I think I'm back in, they push me back out with either some silliness or just like a plot move that I totally don't understand, or just like a dull 20 minutes of bizarre drama. And Game of Thrones is just the opposite. I mean, they at every turn, there's some crazy new thing that you have to process that makes the world more interesting.
Right. Well, and I think that comes back to writing and character, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I can't think of how many, like, deaths over the course of the series The Walking Dead is set up as these like big emotional moments where you're kind of like, who is that guy again? Or, sorry, they're gone. You know, because they hadn't spent the time developing the richness of the character, or they had spent like next to no time, and then like right before they, you know, as soon as they determined this person was going to die,
then all
they like stuffed a bunch of character development in like three episodes.
That's funny. Then, you know what that makes me think of is the most hated episode of one of.
Are you going Nikki and Paolo?
I'm going
here?
Nikki and Paolo. you know, I love Lost, and that episode. I think it got maybe a little more flack than it deserved because it was kind of the emblem of what was wrong with that period of Lost.
Unpopular opinion alert, I don't hate Nikki and Paolo.
Yeah, you might not, and I'm not sure I do either, actually, but they fit that rubric exactly of people you don't really know or care about that suddenly we need to stretch a little bit. So here's an episode where you both get the backstory of these characters you didn't really know or care about, and then we're going to kill them. But now at least you know their backstory, so hopefully you're somewhat attached. And again, I didn't think it was all that tragedy that the internet and critics seem to think that it was. But you get that's sort of the feeling you're talking about with Walking Dead, is trying to force you to care about something that you don't just for the sort of sucker punch of taking it away from you. Game of Thrones has not done that. And by the way, they don't even really set up the deaths. Because that's another thing about Walking Dead is, like, you feel a death coming for an episode and a half, And then they spend half an episode deciding whether or not they really died. Game of Thrones is like, la-di-da, oh, I love that guy. Oh, my God, he got his head cut off.
Yeah, and look, you should say, it is fair to note, I guess, that Game of Thrones is working with a much, much larger budget than even a show like The Walking Dead, which is quite popular.
Of course. But
to me, that all the more comes back for The Walking Dead, you know, that's sort of been hamstrung, I think, at times by, like, look, we need to kind of set this thing in one location for X period of time.
Yeah.
Of, like, really being able to develop, like, interesting relationships and interesting things. You know, I mean, how long did they spend on, you know, Rick being like, the burden of leadership is so hard.
Yeah.
And, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, oh, God. I mean, that was, like, 2 seasons worth of that, so.
Yeah, and that's another interesting thing about Game of Thrones, as we sort of generally spread love, is that Daenerys is a great example. We have this young woman in the beginning of the series who seems like is going to be kind of put upon for the foreseeable future and who has no power whatsoever. And then there's like a twist and all of a sudden she's in charge and all of a sudden she has this group of people following her. And then, all of a sudden, a bigger group of people. And then she's on her way to Westeros, basically. She's going to take over everything. And we're like, oh, man, the Starks and Lannisters don't even know what's going on. Here comes Daenerys. And then, no, actually, she's going to govern this place for a little while. And there's going to be a whole different set of storylines. And that, you know, these twists that aren't necessarily, like, thriller twists that are a dramatic hairpin turn, but the plot lines we kind of saw coming don't necessarily materialize. And, you know, characters head in different directions. They're just a little more complex. And I think, as you kind of just referenced, part of the reason Game of Thrones can do that so much better than Walking Dead, I mean, obviously source material has something to do with it, but you need to get
sorry
that.
Sorry about that. I do not.
All right.
Although, it's going to ring for a bit because I don't really know how to shut off the ringer. So.
Whatever. I feel like that adds local color to the podcast. Indeed, Derek Madden's a busy and important person that sometimes gets phone calls in his office.
Too many phone calls in the office.
Here's a question for you while
the phone rings and we're talking about old Dany Targaryen. Like, you know, if these characters in the Game of Thrones, you know, chessboard are, you know, kind of different pieces with different abilities, and, you know, Dany is a queen or whatever. I'm getting out of my depth with chess analogy. But, like, isn't it time for her to, like, make one of those big moves and, like, take a king or something? Like, I feel like we, you know, she's sort of been in this kind of holding pattern here for a minute.
Well, isn't that what that's kind of one of the things I'm getting at, is that it's fascinating. The Game of Thrones, And see, this is where it's tricky, because I think it has been George R. R. Martin that we would be talking about. He in charge of the plot to a degree, and now maybe it's the showrunners, and it's hard to necessarily see where the lines of demarcation are there, but they don't seem to have any interest in serving the audience, per se. And I love that. You know, not because I don't necessarily get what I want, but because I feel like artists, as it were, you know, producers of video content, as who intend to cater to the audience, aren't usually making great stuff. I mean, people like they're.
But is it catering to the audience or catering to the story?
Well, I mean, I think that's the question. Does she need for the story to have something happen? Yes. Would the logical next step be take her to Westeros? Probably, but that does not seem to be what's happening. She seems to instead have headed the other direction, right? Because when
we leave her,
she's getting basically kidnapped by who's it? What's it? I'm forgetting their name now.
I don't need her to make a certain move, but it's the Game of Thrones. And at some point, I want her to make a move towards a throne.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
And you have to believe that's coming, because it would be a big kind of unsatisfying and unsuccessful tease if she never even makes a play for the main throne. That being said, I mean, clearly the battle lines are changing to be humans versus crazy ice creatures, right? So by the time she gets there, she might just be jumping into the crazy ice creature fight anyway.
Yeah. I mean, look, we think that's where the battle lines are headed.
Right, but again, that's the great thing is they could sort of yank the rug out from under us at any time. That makes me excited.
Well, and with only, you know, there's what, 2 seasons left? Like
Is it just 2? No, I think it's 3. I think it's this one and 2 more after.
2 more after?
I'd have to check, but I think so.
All right. Well, I was going to say that we know the action's going to start to accelerate, but I'm not sure that's the case. For some reason I really thought there were only 2 more. But I could be wrong.
I'm going to check into this.
Yeah, I'm Googling. Before we switch gears to something else, I do want to mention that there is another show coming back tonight, in fact.
What?
The Americans on FX. And there are not a ton of people watching the show. The ratings, frankly, should be better than they are. It's great.
Yeah.
It's great.
I've obviously you have told me this before. I've heard this from a variety of sources in the past. It's just hard for whatever reason. It's hard to squeeze it in. I don't really have a good answer for that.
Unfortunately, part of the problem is that you know, it's not the kind of show that's super easy to jump into the middle. You kind of want to have seen the first couple of seasons. So at this point, some work to do to be a part of the narrative. But it's so routinely satisfying, and the dynamic. For those of you who know nothing about the show, it's about a married couple of KGB spies embedded in America, living as Americans in the early 1980s. They have a family. And jobs as a travel agent, and then they go around and perform KGB missions, and complications ensue. And it's really interesting, just kind of study of the dynamics of the politics between, you know, the Cold War battles and the dynamics of what's essentially a marriage between two people who were hired to be husband and wife and have real life children, but yet are also having these other roles. And, you know, they're work partners. They have this kind of, you know, family situation. They're not married in truth, but there's love there. And it's just this like amazing, really complicated relationship. And the performances, so many good performances, across the board. On that show. I can't recommend it enough, and not enough people are watching it. So,
you know, it's interesting because I'm totally all in on this show. I just can't, like, get to it. I just can't. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not doubting at all. I quite enjoy it. I think I would quite enjoy it is what I'm trying to say. All of the things that you just described appeal to me, but I don't know what it is. I don't know.
Well, this is not news given my previous stance on the podcast. But I would say, for God's sake, you know, if you need some time, drop The Walking Dead, and jump in on this guy.
Except
take that time.
Except I can't. We've been through this. I'm a completist, and just as I can't drop The Walking Dead, when you said, "Oh, it's not the sort of show you jump in the middle," that's like you might as well have said, "Oh, this isn't just one of those things where you jump up on top of a building, wag your dick around, and then shoot heroin into your eye." Like, of course I start at the beginning. What kind of, do you think I'm a savage? Do you think I'm some sort of wild animal that doesn't care about previous backstories? Like, I don't understand what that's about. If I was just about to start watching Law & Order SVU, I would start at the beginning.
God.
Like, I cannot. I just, that's how my brain works. It'll drive me nuts.
You might have some problems. You might have some problems.
Might?
All right. Speaking of starting at the beginning.
I mean, we've hung out. You know. By the way, I did look it up. Season 6 is the current season. Season 8 is the final season. So all right. 30 episodes, 3 seasons remaining.
3 seasons left. All right.
For Game of Thrones. The Americans might get canceled this week if I don't start watching.
Is it weird? And I say this, I love Game of Thrones, and I'm really excited that there's more Game of Thrones, but I think I would feel better if there were 2 more seasons left instead of 3.
Isn't that just from
a story standpoint?
Yeah, that's just you saying you think they'll make more stuff happen faster if there's less episodes left.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure
I feel like that's sort of a natural place to wrap it up, and maybe, you know, maybe I'm wrong. I didn't read the book, so clearly I...
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I'm behind. In as much as I've read any of the books, I'm way behind, but, you know, I don't...
Yeah, stop reading books and start watching The Americans.
I have not finished a book in a very long time. Don't you worry. That is not the reason I'm watching The Americans. Spoiler alert. It's not because I'm reading.
Yeah.
It's a lot of basketball and television.
All right. Fair enough. Hey, I know there's something that both of us, wanted to talk about. Cause I think it fits right into some of our pet wheelhouses, from the sports world. And that is one Mr. Goose Gossage. I think most people have seen the Goose's comments about the game today and how these players with their pimping home runs and
their bat flips
are ruining the game.
I feel like we can illustrate the absurdity of this. I mean, not that it needs much work, but I feel like we can emphasize the absurdity of this. If we try to explain it to someone who may not be a baseball fan. So here we've got this sport, this game that these men, adult men, play for millions and millions of dollars. And some of those men, after they do really awesome, exciting things, get excited and do things to express that excitement. And for reasons that I will never fully be able to understand, both grumpy men, both young and old, get very upset and take that excitement very personally and whine about it. And essentially what happened is a young baseball player said what I just said, only in a more polite way, in a magazine. He said, I think the game needs to let people have more fun. I think the game is old and tired, and they should allow enthusiasm.
People to express themselves.
Exactly. Yeah. And an old, tired man who hasn't been relevant or on a baseball field in about 15 years.
22 years was the last time he played.
Okay, 22 years. Came out and...
and said, get off my lawn.
He not only said, get off my lawn, but with a level of F-bomb usage that even I thought was a little bit ridiculous, and believe me, I am a frequent user of that word when not on air, basically said, not only should baseball players not express themselves, but that he would like to get in a fight with any baseball players who do want to express themselves, and that basically everyone should just do their job on the field and go back to the dugout, and then also potentially chew a lot of tobacco and like drink non-light beer after the game to show how tough they are. I added the last part myself, but that is the message.
I guess, yeah, that's, you know, the biggest part of this that I don't understand is, like, what is it that Goose Gossage feels like he's protecting?
Oh, and by the way, we should have mentioned part of that screed was also deriding smart people and anyone.
Oh, yeah, nerds.
The nerds running the game. So because he feels like a couple of very small rule changes designed to protect players from breaking things, he feels like that's sissy stuff. And he thinks that anyone using numbers to get better at sports is a nerd who should be thrown out.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm veering out of the toy department with this comment. But like, this is the Trump voter kind of position about life. Like, things are happening that I don't understand, and they make me angry, so I'm going to lash out at, oh, it's nerds are ruining the game because I can't handle it, and I'm angry, and I'm not quite sure why, so I'm going to hurl some insults.
Make baseball great again.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. We've got to bring baseball back to when it was really good, meaning when I did stuff. Right?
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, you don't even have to go. Here's the thing. Grumpy old people, you got to find a way to write them off because it's trash. It's tired old trash. And frankly, ironically, it's exactly what Bryce Harper was talking about. Mm-hmm. I mean, Goose Gossage came out and demonstrated the exact kind of stupid, tired old behavior that Bryce Harper was referencing when he said the game is tired. And, you know, I think Goose thinks he stood up for baseball when, in fact, he made Bryce Harper's point even more emphatic. You don't even have to go to Trump, though, because guess who's doing this in basketball? Everybody. Oscar Robertson, yep. Charles Barkley literally had to put on a t-shirt last year after the NBA Finals that said, "Jump shooting teams won, Charles Barkley zero in NBA championships." He wore that shirt, and yet he is on late night on a national network on no pay TV saying again,
yeah,
the Warriors can't win a title.
It's still basic cable. Let's not get carried away.
I'm just saying, the guy, oh my God. No, wasn't he? Oh, was it Conan?
That's the thing about all of these guys is, like, it's all a look at me move. That's all what it's designed for. Everyone sees through, you know, the idea of, like, oh, well, the back in my day.
Is it look at me, though?
Yes. Yeah,
I mean, I think that.
Because Gossage, who, by the way, is in the Hall of Fame because nerds put him there.
Correct.
You know, he wants to be like, well, in my day, we didn't have all these specialty relievers. A real man's reliever went three innings. You know, and Oscar Robertson's like, back in my day, we had hand checking, and we would have knocked this guy on his ass.
Yeah, you also had a league that was like 70% white, and there were 12 teams or whatever it was.
Right, exactly. You know. Yeah, and back in your day, you averaged a triple-double because teams were shooting at these, like, ridiculous rates and not making that many,
correct.
You know? So, like, yes, back in your day, the game was different. The game is different now. The game will be different then, you know, in 10 years
yep.
from now because players come along and change the game. And rather than, like, you know, the problem is all of these guys take this as a personal affront. They did what they did. They know what they know. And if you don't know what they did, you're not recognizing what they did. And they can't handle it. They can't handle it. Like, it's so obvious that Goose Gossage is pissed off because the modern game's making him irrelevant. And Bryce Harper's comments are making him irrelevant. And as it turns out, he is irrelevant. And he looks foolish. And I don't want to be disrespectful because I understand what Goose Gossage did in the game. I was alive for Goose Gossage.
Yeah, me too.
And Goose Gossage was a hell of a player in his day. I'm not trying to take that away from him, but I am glad the world is not going to sit there in silence without just serving Goose Gossage a whole big glass of shut the f*** up.
Yeah, well, here's the thing about this is, like, you said it. The game has changed. The game will change. The game is almost always improving. It doesn't really matter what game we're talking about. The people around whatever game it is, they're trying to make it better. And usually, in the long run, you know, by the same ideas as evolution, good ideas continue, bad ideas filter their way out. And generally, things are always improving. And yes, Goose Gossage is irrelevant, but it's not because he did anything wrong, and it's not because his importance to his time is diminished. It's because time. That's it.
Right.
The reason is time. We all become irrelevant. Everything will become irrelevant. Time moves on. That's it. And mm-hmm. and this,
I think we,
that's why it, this it, is so dumb, is because you were always going to become irrelevant. The fact that it's Steph Curry or Bryce Harper making you irrelevant is not relevant, because mm-hmm. it was going to be somebody. So Just please, I like seeing all these tired old men. It just, I keep thinking to myself, if I'm ever that guy, shoot me in the head. Because I just don't want to be an old-ass man whining about how the new things are all crappy.
Right. And it's like you see this, you know, there was a guy in Chicago.
Don't speak ill of Chicago now.
I'm not speaking ill of Chicago. Right. I want to say he wrote for the
Bernie Lincecum.
Who you know, dropped this, like, who wants, you know, it's like the Steph Curry backlash column where he's like, hey, Steph Curry's boring. Who wants to watch this guy? It's like,
that wasn't, what? That was like, troll what? Nonsense.
What? Like, what? Like, if you're bored by this, please turn off the TV, put your pen down,
see yourself
stop writing,
out.
And yes, and show yourself the door, because there hasn't been anything this exciting in sports since that other guy running around Chicago. And you know what? I'm just going to say, I think I like watching 2016 Steph more than I liked watching Michael Jordan.
I mean, it might be a toss-up for me, which is saying a lot, because I am as big a Bulls fan as you will find.
If your eyes are not popping out of your head and just going, what? You know what I mean? Like, with all the stuff that this guy's doing, then you were too jaded to enjoy this anymore.
Yes.
And, you know, and I'm over it. Like, all these guys, they're just showing their ass. Like, it's all about them. I'm an Atlanta Braves fan. And if you're an Atlanta Braves fan, you despise the Washington Nationals. You know, in that sports hate way.
Yeah.
And if you despise the Washington Nationals, the guy that really, really, really makes you want to punch something is Bryce Harper.
Absolutely.
So for me to be sitting here firmly on Team Bryce, it means you're being a jerk.
Yeah.
I am right there with you, because I have wanted to papelbon that guy for pretty much his entire major league career. So.
Yeah, and you know what? I bet there have even been times when the exuberance of Bryce Harper on the field has been the thing that made you want to punch him in the face. And yet, you would never say, how dare he?
Right, because that's the thing. It's sports hate. And you know what? At the end of the day, he's right. It's like, you got me.
Yeah.
You
know? Right.
We're going to come out and get you next time. And
that's
then we're going to make a funny meme about it. You
yeah,
know I mean?
Believe
like,
me. There's a part of me that literally, it's a horrible use of literally, but quite figuratively boils at the sight of Aaron Rodgers discount double-checking his way through the whole goddamn NFL. Believe me, I am not thrilled with this. The fact that my arch-rival football team went from one Hall of Fame QB straight to another. But you know what? When he scores his next touchdown on the Bears, which won't be that long into our next game against the Packers, he has every right to discount double-check again. And I'm going to be pissed, but like you just said, there's going to be a part of me that's like, you son of a bitch, you got me again.
Yeah. By the way, funny story that's been kind of making the rounds right here. I don't know if you've heard of it as a Bears fan. Totally different gear. You know, the Vikings opening up their new stadium, announced a show with Metallica here today in that new stadium. I'm very excited about it. The new stadium, U.S. Bank Stadium, is on Chicago Street here in Minneapolis.
Really?
And the Vikings very much want to change the name of that street because they feel like they're going to get hazed.
Hold on.
About
so
it.
Wait. So wait. Is it in like central Minneapolis?
It's downtown. Yeah, it's right downtown.
Wow.
New stadium.
Yeah. That's exciting.
Yeah. So, yeah, they want to change the name of Chicago Street. And I kind of see their point. Like, don't you feel like if you rolled into town to watch a Bears game, you know, you'd be taking all the pictures by the signs and, you know, right?
100% yes.
Yeah.
But here's what I would say. If they change the name of Chicago Street, they better goddamn give us another Chicago Street. Because there needs to be, I mean, the idea of a Minneapolis, look. I feel like outside of the occasional sports rivalry, Minneapolis and Chicago are on pretty good terms.
Well, wait, is there a Minneapolis Street in Chicago?
It's a great
Minneapolis
question.
Ave?
I'm sure there's a Minnesota.
No. I'm going to guess no. But Chicago Street's a big, long street, and I'm sure that they would just rename the section of it around the stadium. So I'd imagine there'd still be a Chicago Street somewhere in town.
Okay, because you know, there is a Minneapolis Ave in Franklin Park, Illinois, which is on the blue line. So essentially Chicago, yeah.
There you go.
Oh, no, wait. That's in Chicago, isn't it? Hold on. Yeah. Minneapolis Avenue. Absolutely. There you go.
Minneapolis Avenue. I stand corrected.
It's like west. It's west of the city, but it's close.
All right. So we need to go. Let's do. Do you want to do? Should we do some homework? Or you got another thing?
Well, I just want to. The music thing. Which I guess we could make it homework. I have an album that I want to throw out to people.
Yeah. Hit us.
Have you ever heard of a band? I guess you would call them an indie band called. First of all, this is one of my favorite band names ever. Okay. Tao and the Get Down Stay Down.
I am very familiar. It's a San Francisco indie band.
It is indeed, and they released.
I've met Tao a few times.
Yeah, she's around. She's a lady about town.
An attractive lady about town.
Indeed.
Can I say that? Is that inappropriate?
No, I think that's appropriate and accurate. And she's also a very talented lady about town. And they have a new album. I'm a fan in general, but Tao and the Get Down Stay Down have a new album, which the name of I have just completely spaced on, but it won't take long because it's right here on my iPhone, A Man Alive. It is new in the last couple of weeks, and I just think it's great and a pretty, I don't want to say typical, but representative expression of the band as I've known them, and just a heck of a listen. It's like, I might describe it as like funky indie folk, if that's a thing.
Okay. If you were going to compare them to a band that people might know, what band would you compare them to?
Wow. If I was going to compare...
And is it really a band, or is it just Tao?
Well, this is an interesting question that I've researched in the last few days, actually. If you, like, go to the web, it's like the band is these people. But my understanding for a while has been it's really just Tao and some dudes that play music with her, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Of course, I don't know if that's just my own fantastical made-up understanding or a real understanding, but that has been my understanding. Who would I compare them to? Or her to is a fascinating question. You know, people love that. What's her face? The Australian or New Zealand, the girl who had the big album this year, Courtney Barnett, is it? Courtney
yes.
Barrett? Barnett?
Big fan of Courtney Barnett. That I would, you know, if you haven't checked out that record, the lyrics on that record are fantastic.
Very good record. And I don't know how similar it is outside of a woman singer songwriter who has her own sort of unique sounding voice that's very particular to her, and a sort of a irreverent style that is probably an indie rock essentially, but features elements that are a little funkier, there's a little more to it than the average singer songwriter indie album.
All right,
I'm not sure there's a lot of great comps because she's not one of these big-voiced people like Florence or someone like that. But she's also not, there's some real oomph to the music that, you know, maybe this sort of the average, again, indie singer-songwriter doesn't necessarily come with. I find it really cool. I like it a lot.
All right. I'm going to throw out something that it will be easy because it's not really an album yet. Just listen to a couple of singles from a band called Kaleo. Kaleo is a band from Iceland. Iceland is a country that has punched above its weight.
How do you spell Kaleo?
Kaleo.
Okay, I'm going to have to look into this. No, not,
you know,
Kale, but Kaleo. Sorry.
Kaleo. Yeah, like Kale with an O at the end.
Autocorrect wanted me to type Kale instead.
The big Kaleo song right now that's starting to make some noise is a song called Way Down We Go.
Okay.
If you've seen any of the commercials for the new season of Empire, it's featured pretty prominently in that song. And it's kind of one of those songs that I have a feeling is going to soundtrack a lot more movies and trailers.
Okay. Because
it's almost in that kind of like soulful, like you remember that Moby record when like Moby was a thing?
Yeah, of course.
You know,
play
with, like, the kind of, yes, with the, you know, soul samples. Like, there's a little bit of that vibe in there. And they're a band that does a couple of different things. And you know, you think about some of the bands that have come out of Iceland, whether it be like of Monsters of Men or Bjork or Sigur Rós. Like, they tend to have these sort of like lush, expressive kind of background sort of songs, and they tend to, you know, come from a little bit left of center perspective, but maintain pop instincts. And I hear a lot of that in these couple of Kaleo singles that are out there, and I think they're all really interesting and good.
I think
they're a band that's going to blow up a little bit this year. So I checked.
All right. I will. And I also, those bands you invoked, which I guess they're just Icelandic bands, may also make me think of like the occasional sort of dissonant hollering from the vocalist.
Yes. There is some occasional dissonant hollering.
I don't say that negatively. That sounds, I'm intrigued by that.
Yeah. You know, we, at some point we'll talk about my, deep, deep love of Sigur Rós and how I
really,
if you can get into that band, because it's certainly not for everybody, but if you kind of have your window into that world, I just think that they're one of the most amazing things in music.
I think maybe at some point we should go with a Sigur Rós / Fish episode of the Toy Department.
Yeah, but that probably needs to happen.
Yeah,
maybe that'll be next week.
Whoa, you just blew
probably
my mind.
Not,
probably not. Probably not. You know, actually, we were talking about DVR backlogs. If we're gonna tease ahead to next week, I would maybe like to revisit some Better Call Saul conversation because I caught up last night.
Oh, excellent! Yeah, we can definitely do that. That's the one show that I'm watching. That and OJ, I'm watching.
Oh my god, OJ! Oh my god!
They did it again last night.
They did it again. They did it again. Yes, OJ, the people versus OJ Simpson, and the concept of dramatic irony is a definite topic for next week.
I mean, just you're watching the glove, you know how the glove works out, and yet it's so taut and suspenseful, and like
there were at least two, if not three or four, scenes last night where I found myself thinking like, wait a second, why am I so tense? I know exactly what's going to happen.
I know,
like,
I know.
The scene where Schwimmer and Ace and Malcolm Jamal Warner, you know, Kardashian and AC Cowlings open the garment bag, I knew there was no knife in that garment bag.
Yeah.
And yet, the music was tense and they were acting tense and I was like, oh my God, what's going to... And then I was like, wait a second. I know. Unbelievable. It is peak dramatic television art is what that show is.
Yep. And when AC asks Kardashian to like finish the sentence,
yeah,
oh my god, so powerful, you know. Whew. All right, we can gush more about OJ next week, as we should.
I'm sure we'll have a whole other episode of Incredible to talk about, so
for sure. All right, thank you guys for listening. Should we give out the email address?
Yes. ToyDepartmentPod@gmail.com.
Do
it. ToyDepartmentPod@gmail.com. Email us with thoughts, with questions, with concerns, with look, if you're in a panic and you just need someone to talk to, that email address is there. Someone may read it.
Yeah. If you have Goose Gossage rants, we'll take those.
Oh, too. Look, if you want to call Goose Gossage a tired old asshole, I will read it on the podcast next week.
We're here for you.
That's a promise.
You're tired old assholes.
ToyDepartmentPod@gmail.com.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.